11. The central hallway through the ground floor level of Atchison storage was 200 feet long, with white louvered garage doors running the length of it 30 per side. There was a pristine beauty to it, if you were into symmetry and the vanishing point, that optical illusion that makes a pair of infinite-seeming parallel lines appear to intersect far on the horizon. If you had to walk that hallway and a few others like it a dozen times every night for your job, it was boring as shit. But tonight, Teacake was walking it with Naomi. They were headed for the elevator at the other end, impossibly far away. Naomi had the picture she'd taken of the schematic up on her phone, and she scooched the image around, finding the elevator on the map and sliding it down to sub-basement 1, where the tube ladder's top entrance point seemed to be. Teacake was nervous talking.
Gets down to it, the whole thing's just a terrible idea. Don't pay for storage. Don't ever pay for storage. I've seen a half a mountain of shit come into this place, and almost none of it ever comes out, except for the super short-term stuff. People pay anywhere from $40 to $500 a month, depending on the space and the climate controls, and it's all for garbage they 100% do not need.
That's a little judgmental, isn't it?
Not really. These are sick people, man, most of them, and the storage place, they're slick, you know, it's sales, they know what they're doing, they handle it like they're slinging rock on the corner. Take, for example, somebody's got to move, right? They get foreclosed on or whatever, this place gives them the first 30 days free. People figure, hey, cool, I don't have to throw nothing out, I'll just move some of my extra stuff in here, figure it out for a month, no rush, then I can eBay some of it and toss the rest without ever paying a dime. But that never, ever happens. Nobody moves out of here. So your ratty couch that you don't even like anymore and your old Christmas decorations and your parents' sheets that you kept after they died for some reason, now they're all just exhibits in your sad museum. Oh, hey, no, that don't fly, fuck nugget.
It stopped, abruptly, seeing something on one of the white doors. He went to a storage closet, unlocked it, took out a heavy-duty bolt cutter, and returned to the third unit back on the left. There was a brass padlock hanging from the latch, sticking up at an angle, an extra lock put on there by the renter. Teacake snapped it off with one squeeze of the bolt cutters. They ain't supposed to add their own locks. Ours are the onlyest ones you gotta use, so we have access, like in case there's a legalness going on in there.
What kind of a legalness?
By way of an answer, Teacake pulled his master key out from the retractable keychain reel on his hip, put the key into the main lock on the unit, flicked it open, and cranked up the door. He immediately regretted it and proved the wisdom of the adage, don't open a door unless you know what's on the other side, if any such adage existed. Inside the unit, 24 55-inch Samsung flat-screen TVs, still in the factory packaging, were neatly stacked in rows, leaning against the walls.
My mistake, Teacake said. Everything's cool.
He closed the door again and they continued down the hall. She looked at him. He shrugged.
I don't care what they got, they just can't hide it from me. Rules is rules.
She looked at him. Why do you talk like that?
Like what?
Like you're from the hood.
This is how everybody I know talks.
You know me and I don't.
You got any other objections to how I am?
She thought about it.
Not yet.
They got to the end of the corridor and pushed the button for the elevator. He looked at her while he waited.
You don't talk much, do you?
He said. Not as much as you.
Nobody talks as much as me.
She looked back down at her phone, moving the image down the ladder through the earthen part toward SP4. He had more questions.
So, you got college, you do this sometimes, what else?
That's not enough.
Not really, you don't get many shifts.
How do you know? He shrugged.
My job is to watch the monitors.
Yeah, I see you too. The elevator arrived and she got in first. He followed. The doors closed.
You get what, maybe two nights a week, he said.
So far.
So, you got another job?
Sorta.
You got people?
Do I have people? Of course I have people. Teacake, what's your real name?
Travis, Meacham.
Travis, you're kind of sucking all the fun out of this. The truth was, he knew she had people, and he knew exactly which people she had. But there was no way to bring it up without seriously creeping her out. Her first night at work had been exactly 2 weeks ago, and he'd noticed her on the monitors immediately. She was taking a shift usually filled by Alfano Cololo, an enormous Samoan who had to go 300 pounds easy. The camera in the eastern reception area was placed close to the desk, and Alfano so dominated the screen that his absence one night fairly screamed at TK to take notice. Truth, who would not notice a thing like that? When Alfano sat on the little metal stool, he was a man-mountain who appeared to be eating a four-legged metal insect with his ass. When, that Thursday, 2 weeks ago, TK looked up and saw Naomi there instead, a heavenly choir sang in his head. He'd stared at her image that night with the intensity of a teenager monitoring his Facebook likes. She sat, she stood, she did her rounds, and always she walked in beauty, like the night. He'd memorized that poem in Ellsworth. They'd had to pick something and learn it by heart for explorations in poetry, and that was the shortest of the ones you could pick. He knew the poem, but he didn't know the poem until he saw Naomi on the monitor. When she showed up for work again 2 days later, he studied her on the monitors for hours, absorbing as much detail as one possibly could from a 540-pixel image. She had a book with her that night. He couldn't quite get the title, but he loved her focus, the way her brow furrowed up at parts. He loved the way she turned the pages. He loved that she even read at all and didn't just stare at her phone like everybody else. When she wasn't back until the following Sunday, he realized she was a fill-in, that she was grabbing shifts when and if she could get them, and that there was a very real possibility that she would never be back again. So, he told himself, it wasn't really that he followed her after work. Yes, he did leave 5 minutes early so he could zip around to the other side of the bluffs and be near her parking lot when she left. And yes, he did swing out onto the highway just after she did and keep his car a safe and unthreatening distance behind hers on the road at all times. And yes, he did speed up when she sped up and slow down when she slowed down and make the same turns that she made until he eventually reached her place of residence. But he knew in his heart it wasn't with weird intent. He was just trying to engineer a casual run-in. It just didn't work out. Once Naomi left the Atchison parking lot, it was kind of hopeless. All country highways till he got to her apartment complex, and then how on earth could he pull up in the car next to her at her building and say, "Oh, hey, don't you work where I do? Didn't I see you on the monitor a couple times? And man, isn't it weird that you live here 12 miles away and I was going the exact same way, but my car started making this weird sound, so I had to stop right here in the parking lot of the very same apartment building where you live? Isn't that bizarre?" He couldn't say that. The smoothest motherfucker in human history, arguably Wilt Chamberlain, couldn't have pulled that one off. So, rather than scare her, TK could just sat in the car, waiting till she went in, pretending to be absorbed in his phone. It was a flip, by the way, so if she'd noticed him, she might well have wondered what the hell he was staring at. He waited till she got inside, then he waited some more just to see which light went on, then he waited a teensy bit more just to see if, well, because he did, and before he knew it, almost an hour had gone by, and he really honestly was about to go when the door of the place opened again, and he saw her come out with the little girl. There was no question that the girl was her daughter. Some things you can just tell. They looked alike, for starters, but it also was the way Naomi held the little girl's hand. Nobody holds your hand like that except your mama. The little girl was cute as hell and dressed in clean, pressed clothes, a detail TK noticed because his own clothes when he was a kid had always been dirty as shit. He blushed, right there in his car, embarrassed. Not because he was stalking this poor woman and now her kid, but because of all the times that he went to school in filthy clothes and with an unwashed face. But this little girl was what a kid was supposed to look like. She was clean and bright, and her mom had given her a good breakfast. He just knew she had, even though she'd come off a 12-hour shift and hadn't slept since God knows when. Naomi had come home and made breakfast, maybe even put some cinnamon sugar on the kid's toast the way she liked. The little girl was talking a mile a minute, and Naomi was listening. Not kind of listening, but trying to actually make sense of what the kid was saying, which had to be nonsense. I mean, how much can a 4-year-old say that matters anyway? He didn't know, but from what he'd heard, the percentage was pretty low. Mostly it was just, "I want more frosting," or some shit. They got to the car, the little girl got into a car seat in the back, and Naomi stood there, waiting, her hand on the door, as her daughter finished her pointless point. Teacake rolled down his window, just a little. He was close enough, just barely, to make out a few words. Not the little girl's. Those were all faint and little girly and coming too fast from inside the car, but he could hear what Naomi said in response after waiting till her daughter stopped for a breath. "I hear you, sweetie,"
That stinks. And then she closed the door. That was what killed him. It wasn't, oh, come on, it's not that bad, or, honey, please, we're late, or, that's some stupid, ridiculous bullshit. You gotta learn to shut up when you talk to people. It was, I hear you. That stinks. It was all he ever, ever wanted from people when he talked to them. To be heard. And this lady gave it to a 4-year-old after being up all night. And all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes. So what Teacake wanted to say that night while they rode down in the elevator, what he was dying to say was, you're fucking awesome with your daughter. But is there a good way to ease into that when you're not even supposed to know she has a daughter? So instead he said nothing. The elevator door slid open. Sub-basement 1 was supposed to be the only sub-basement, and it had never occurred to anybody to question the need for the number. SB1 looked just fine on the elevator keypad, as good as any other number. The facility's history as a government installation wasn't a secret, so finding out there had once been other, lower levels wouldn't have been much of a surprise had anybody ever bothered to think about it. But to find out there were 3 of them, and they were connected by an elaborate series of sensors and alarms to a control panel that had since been walled up behind the reception desk, you know, that would have raised a few eyebrows. According to the schematic, the top entrance to the tube ladder was located at the end of a short, dead-end hallway about 100 feet from the elevator bank. Naomi reached the end first, stopped, and turned around in the white-painted cinder block space. There was nothing there that suggested an entrance. In fact, the opposite. Everything about this space said, this is the end. There were 3 larger storage units on each side of the hallway, the big 200-square-foot jobs that were mostly used by factories storing overstocks, but there was no door or hatchway or obvious entrance of any kind except for a small, narrow cabinet between 2 units marked staff only. Naomi looked from the map to the hallway to the map. I don't get it. You sure it's here? She held the map out to him. Look for yourself. He took the phone, held the map one way, then the other, slid it around a bit. Naomi went to the far wall, the dead end, and smacked it a few times here and there with the flat of her hand. Solid. She knocked, tapped with a fist. Cinderblock, she said. If it's behind here, we'd need a sledgehammer, or a jackhammer. Yeah, I'm not down for that. Teacake turned the phone upside down, looking at the schematic again. He looked down at the floor. That's interesting, man. He zipped the keys out of his keyring again. Had to admit he loved the metallic zing that it made whenever he pulled them out. He'd never been a person who had more than 1 key before this job, and went to the narrow maintenance cabinet. He opened the cabinet, took a claw hammer off a tool rack, and went back to the same spot in the hallway where he'd been standing, about 3 feet from the cinder block dead end. He moved till his back was against the wall, got down on all fours, and tapped the hammer once on the floor. It made an unpromising chunk sound. That's concrete, she said. Yep. He crawled forward, brought the hammer down again. Same sound. He kept crawling, tapping the hammer every 6 inches or so, getting the same sound every time. It's a concrete floor, Travis. Weird to hear my real name. He kept moving, kept tapping the hammer on the floor. Sorry, she said. It bothers you? Can't decide. Yes, he could, and he already had. It didn't bother him. He loved it. His heart skipped a beat every time she said his name. He couldn't wait till she said it again. Please say it again. Just 1 more time. Dong! He'd nearly reached the center of the hallway, and when he brought the hammer down there, it produced a hollow, metallic echo. He looked up at Naomi. She grinned and squatted down on the floor next to him. He held up the phone, swiping to enlarge a certain portion of the screen. Right there. That semicircle made of dashes, kind of shaded gray. Can you see it? Yeah, barely. That's the entrance. They just painted over it. Together, they looked down at the floor. He spun the hammer around in his hand a couple of times, thinking. He sat back. Okay, look, there's no way we could hide this shit we're about to do. What are we about to do? Wreck some more stuff? He said. But here's how I see it. Part of our job is security, and there's an alarm going off, right? It's too late to call Griffin. He's wasted by now, and he wouldn't know what the fuck it is anyway.
He'd just call corporate, but there's nobody at corporate either. It's not like there are self-storage emergencies and they got operators standing by. See what I'm saying? The only other people I can think of to call are the cops.
To say there's an old smoke alarm or something going off in the basement?
Exactly. Ridiculous. But here we are, and there's an alarm going off, and this whole place is stuffed to the rafters with incredibly valuable personal belongings.
Right. This stuff is meaningful to people. This is true, what you're saying. I've always felt that way.
He was warming up to it now, feeling the creative buzz of getting your story straight with somebody.
There's an alarm going off, and we are guards. We are people of the security profession.
We're more like clerks.
Stay with me. Yes, it is a shitty job, but it is our job.
It's our responsibility.
Yes, plus we're curious, she added.
Yeah, but we leave that part out.
She wasn't a natural at lying.
That's all right. He knew enough about it for both of them.
Aight, we in?
You know I am.
Watch your eyes.
She raised a hand and turned away, and he spun the hammer around so it was clawing down and swung it at the floor hard. The hollow metallic boom was louder. There was definitely something down there, and it wasn't cement floor. Chunks of dried paint flew. He swung again 2, 3, 4 times in quick succession, and more paint flecked away. On the last blow, a 2-inch square section flew off and gave them a good look at the unfinished surface beneath. There, under several layers of long-dried, oil-based, semi-gloss gray floor paint, were the unmistakable metal dimples of a manhole cover.